You're listening to a podcast by the United Nations Research Institute for Social Development.
My name is Sigrun Habermann-Box, and I'm the chief of the library's Strategic Planning, Program Evaluation and Outreach Unit, which is why I'm sitting here today. It's a great pleasure for me to welcome everyone to this edition of the UNOT Library Talks, which are dedicated to green urbanization in Asia. Paradox or win-win situation. This challenging topic will be presented to us by Dr. Kwanghua Wan, the principal economist at the Asian Development Bank. His presentation draws on a special chapter presenting the Asian Development Bank's Key Indicators for Asia and the Pacific 2012 report, for which he was the lead author. We're especially pleased to host this event today in collaboration with UNRIST and UNCTAD. This library talk is at the same time part of the UNRIST seminar series, as well as the UNCTAD seminar series on trade and poverty. And we are glad that the collaboration among our institutions provides us with this opportunity to discuss such a challenging and innovative concept combining urbanization and ecology here at the library. It is now my pleasure to invite Mr. Encontre, Chief of the Trade and Poverty Branch at UNCTAD, to present his introductory remarks.
Thank you very much. This is a lunchtime event, and therefore short by definition, so I might as well be equally short, even more. Admittedly, this event could have been sponsored or co-sponsored by UNEP and Habitat. I think you'll agree with me. I mean, instead of that, it is sponsored by UNOG, UNRISD, and UNCTAD. Does it mean that UNCTAD claims to be expert in the facets of this subject? No, by no means. And that's why I should be short, because frankly, I am non-expert in this subject. And most of us, I think, are non-expert. Nevertheless, I think it's very important for us to have Mr. Wan, and we warmly welcome him, particularly because he represents a very important development partner, a partner that covers a region that we know well, I must say, and in which we have many areas of interest, particularly least developed countries in the Asian region, and also small island developing states in the Pacific. So all of that is a sufficient reason already to have Mr. Wan and hopefully to pursue the working relationship with him. But this subject, green urbanization, this will be basically my only remark in this opening context. I think it's not only about quality of life. I think it's very much about the enabling environment for development. And this is also what justifies that we are interested in it one way or the other, the enabling environment. I think that the parameters of the development equation are largely urban related. And therefore, I trust, and I certainly will listen to what Mr. Wan says in order to recognize the various elements that will allow us to say this, I think that making urban areas quality of life areas is just not only, as I said, for standards of living and quality of life, it's also for enabling all stakeholders to be part of trying to play the game of globalization smartly. You know, the UNCTAD equation, finance, investment, trade, services, in the end, hopefully, job creation, employment creation, and poverty reduction, all of that is part of the same picture. And I think you are, with this subject, part of this picture. So I look forward to hearing more about this so that we can enrich ourselves in trying to solve this, what I call the development equation. Thank you.
Thank you, Monsieur Encontre, for your remarks. It is now my pleasure to invite Mrs. Jennifer Friedman, Head of Communications and Outreach at UNRIST, to present her welcome remarks. Ms. Friedman, please.
Thank you. I'm here today representing the UN Research Institute for Social Development. As an autonomous institute within the UN system, we undertake multidisciplinary research and policy analysis on contemporary development issues with a focus on the social dimensions. I'm pleased to be here for this presentation and discussion of what is, I believe, not only a comprehensive study on urbanization in Asia, but also a truly insightful one. while the scale and the speed of urban expansion are contributing to the rise of Asia, the share of the region's population living in cities remains low relative to the rest of the world. So this phenomenon seems set to continue and to intensify. And while urbanization throws up significant environmental challenges, our speaker will also highlight for us some perhaps unexpected positive contributions that urbanization can make to sustainable development. For the last 50 years since its establishment, part of UNRWA's mandate has been to nurture, support, and promote new ideas, which may run counter to received wisdom, highlighting new viewpoints and adding to the plurality of voices in the development community. This is one of the main aims of our seminar series, of which today's presentation is part, to provide a platform for both new and established thinkers in the field of social development and to contribute to improving the quality of development debates, policy, and practice. We take the view that research needs to be clearly communicated and widely disseminated to achieve its fullest potential. It needs to be discussed and debated to refine and improve it. It needs to be shared with those who can implement it. For these reasons, too, UNRWA pursues activities like our seminar series, which bring together researchers, advocates, and policymakers, making use of our unique position within the UN system. I'm particularly pleased today to be sitting here with our counterparts from UNCTAD and the UNOG Library at this seminar jointly coordinated by our three organizations and with a discussant from UNEP. This type of collaboration helps to increase our communications reach and is a manifestation of coherence and knowledge sharing within the UN system. So I don't want to take any more time from our speakers, and I will hand over the floor, looking forward to a thought-provoking discussion and presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Friedman. And now we finally get to our main speaker. Dr. Wan has previously worked as senior economist at the United Nations University's World Institute for Development Economic Research. He has taught at various universities in Australia and in China, and he is honorary professor at Fudan University and other universities in China. With specializations in development economics and econometrics, he is a pioneer in developing regression-based decomposition techniques for inequality and poverty accounting. He's also a leading scholar on the Chinese economy and an expert on Asia. It is my privilege now to invite Dr. Guanghua Wan to make his presentation.
Thank you. UNOG Library, UNRWA, and UNCTAD, particularly Amelia, for organizing this talk. So bringing it back to Geneva. As you know, earlier mentioned, urbanization is a big thing. At the moment, I think 70 to 80% of GDP in Asia is produced in urban areas, and that percentage can only increase as Asian continue to grow. In my assessment, if we talk about Asia's rise, you have to talk about urbanization. Without successful urbanization, without managing urbanization well, Asia probably cannot really rise. So that's really the importance. But of course, urbanization, in that context, urbanization is very important for poverty reduction, for the well-being of Asia and the globe. But on the other hand, there are huge challenges facing this region in terms of urbanization. In fact, the United Nations did a survey a while back asking developing member countries' governments, what's your attitude towards urbanization? And the majority of the national government actually saying they do not like urbanization. And I believe part of the reason is really the environmental considerations. And well, being someone who knows China well, this urbanization thing in China is really taking place in a dramatic way, but some of the big cities are really now saying, we cannot have so many people, we cannot handle it, and we got to really put in place restrictive policies and so on. So the key question for an institution like the Asian Development Bank is really to ask whether urbanization is
in terms of environmental impact, whether it's always negative. Yeah. I mean, we know urbanizing is good for growth, for innovation, and so on, but what about the environment? And that's the one of the very important issues confronted by national governments in the region and beyond. So we started this project last year, and at the beginning, we did not draw any conclusion, and we had no idea what would be the finding, but in the end, we came up with a message. And the message is, we find Asia's urbanization is unprecedented and actually is unique in several aspects. And that's the hard part, because when I took over this job and the bank was asking, said, you got to tell us what's unique. Then we can, you know, base our conclusion from the unique features. And well, we had actually many meetings, and you know, all we can come up with this, you know, is large scale, but large scale is not really, you know, that unique. So we went on doing research, and we did find some sort of unique features of urbanization in Asia. I'm going to outline that. And these actual unique features actually linked or related to these enormous challenges facing Asia with urbanization, particularly the environmental degradation, environmental issues. But our key, if I want to give you, you know, can give you one message, the message is urbanization can help, rather than what a lot of people think urbanization actually is bad for the environment. We think it can help. Yeah? But in order to ensure a win-win situation, Asia should explore unique features. These unique features I mentioned at the beginning of Asia's urbanization, particularly its latecomers advantage. So that's the really message we convey to the national government. So let me just go through some of these unique features. I mean, when we talk about urbanization is unprecedented, we're really talking about both this massive scale and the speed. Now, in terms of the scale, in the last 30 years, Asia added 1 billion inhabitants to its urban system. And in the next 30 years, more than 1 billion will be added to Asian cities. So we're talking about, you know, over 2 billion more people in the urban system in Asia. So I don't have to really tell you how massive that scale is. But what are the unique features? Well, the first feature we found is the speed of urbanizing is very fast. Unfortunately, many national governments actually utilize the European history, Latin American experience, to try to as a benchmark, to try to sort of paint a picture of Asian urbanization, but that's not really right. If you look at this, some of the statistics here, what we did here is we actually dig out data to find out the time when the country reached, or the region reached about 10% urbanization rate, and till the time when it's about 50% or half living in urban cities, how long that took. Well, we found out for Latin America, it's about 210 years. And for North America, it's over 100 years. For Europe, it's 150 years. But for the Asian Pacific, according to the projection, it's only 95 years. So it's actually the fastest speed among all the regions. But if you look at some countries, this is even more dramatic. I mean, pick up China. And we know China is a government which particularly do not like urbanization. They're doing all sorts of things to contain urbanization. But how long did it already happen in China from 10% to 51%? China just crossed 50% mark last year, I think. And it only took China 61 years to urbanize from 10% to 50%. So that just shows the vast, very fast speed of urbanization in this region. And of course, that has implications. The second feature is we have very high density. And of course, most of you will know Asia has high population density. But probably you did not. I don't know whether you know this massive scale. This chart shows the top 25, you know, most dense cities in the world. You don't have to identify each of them. The red bars are located in Asia. Can you see that the most densely populated three cities and the majority of these cities in the world, the most dense cities are located in Asia. And of course, high density also has implications for management, for policy. The third unique feature is there are many mega cities in the region. Now, I have to confess, when I took up this job, our management, the president and the vice president says to me, said, whatever you do, but don't promote mega cities in this report. I mean, I said, my answer is, I'm sorry, I don't know what's the finding, but we got to the research. I don't really, you know, I don't know the answer. But what we found out is actually there are already many megacities in this region. It's more than half already in 2010. By megacities, we're talking about 10 million population or more in a city. So more than half already in Asia. But it's a bit more than that. Despite this very high density, a lot of megacities and the you know massive scale, actually Asia's urbanization is actually at a pretty sort of low level, which is very surprising to us. That's also quite unique. I never thought, you know, if you go you know back a few years, actually Asia's urbanization as a region is lower, even lower than Africa. But of course, development level in Asia has been higher than Africa on average. So that was a surprising thing. At the moment in 2010, the rate of urbanization in Asia is about 43%. It's slightly higher than Africa. And even you look according to the projection in 2050, Asia's urbanization rate is not really much, much higher than Africa. So it's we're still at a pretty low starting base. But more than that, we believe the big cities, the very large cities, are likely to grow even bigger. Well, what's the evidence? And that's the point I just mentioned. You know, when the management said, hey, you don't try to promote big cities, but that's what we found. This is a chart showing the what's it called, the urban the primacy of urban system. It is the population share of the largest cities in each country over the total urban population. And we separate that into Asia and non-Asia. So in Asia, 12% of urban population live in their largest cities. But non-Asia, including Africa, all the other countries considered, that percentage is 21%. It's almost double. Now, we're not saying Asia should have 21% of the national population living in their largest cities, like China, you know, in China it's Shanghai, in Thailand it's Bangkok, in Philippines it's Manila. We're not saying that. But we believe this huge difference in this percentage simply means, implies there are probably are likely to grow even further, even bigger. I mean, we know that Asian cities are already big. Yeah, 12 out of 23 megacities already in Asia, but they probably are even growing much bigger. I mean, I constantly have this debate with Chinese economists on this about Shanghai's size, but it's not the right time to talk about that. So that's another. And that means we will have more megacities, but not only more megacities, but it will even have even bigger megacities in this region. And that really is very challenging for Asia. This unprecedented urbanization, of course, poses enormous challenges. Those challenges are already here. And it can only make the situation more serious. One is growing inequality. I mean, for those who keep your eyes on Asia, Asia faces many challenges, but one of the most pressed problem is really inequality. Inequality in China, in India, in many, most countries are increasing, not only within one country, but also between different countries in Asia. And this has become a huge problem for this region. And that's why you will see China, India, Indonesia now are talking about inclusive growth as their national growth strategies because of this inequality issue. And second, with this urbanization actually means possibly, most likely, rising urban crimes. And that's something, there are a lot of literature on this in urban economics. And that would mean expansion of slums. We already have very serious slum problems in Asia. And above all, or most importantly, our focus is really environmental impacts of urbanization. And we focus on two indicators. One is local pollution. That's a local environmental indicator. The second one focus is really vulnerability to flooding, which is related to climate change, which is a sort of global, more cross-country indicator of the environment. So where are the evidence for us to making those statements? You know, things could get worse before getting better. Well, if you look at this chart, we don't really have data for many countries on, you know, inequality for urban and rural areas. But here are the major economies in this region, China, India, Indonesia. As you can see from this, the red bars indicate Gini coefficient or inequality in urban areas, and the blue corresponding blue bars indicating in Gini coefficient or inequality in rural areas, except China in the early periods. In all these three big countries, urban inequality is larger than rural inequality. And of course, if we don't do anything, I mean, under certain assumptions, if you don't do anything about it, as you move more people from more equal area to a more unequal area, inequality are likely to increase. Yeah. Even in China, I mean, earlier period, China's urban inequality are lower because of this planning system. But when they embarked on reform, things are start changing, and now urban inequality are already higher than rural inequality. So inequality are likely to rise with urbanization. And what about crime rate we mentioned? Well, that's a chart showing the crime homicide rate of city versus the whole country. As you can see, the country are represented by the red dot, and the bars, the top of the bars indicating the city homicide rate. And you see that except Yangon and Colombo, all the other in all the other cases, actually urban homicide rate are higher than the whole country average. And here is a chart on theft rates. And I think people probably will understand why theft rates are typically higher in urban areas. And as you can see, there's a trend. You know, this theft rate increases as urbanization level rises. I mean, that's a just simple plot of all these sorts of country data. And in terms of slums, Asia hosts about 60% of the global slum dwellers. And that number, as you can imagine, we're going to add 1.1 billion more dwellers to the city, to the urban system. You can imagine the number of slum dwellers are likely to increase. But if you look at the trend, the trend is actually moderating, but still increasing. So we believe as if the urbanization really proceeds at a very fast speed, it's likely slum dwellers will increase rather than decrease. And come to the pollution, the environmental issues. Again, here's a chart showing the most polluted cities in the world. And again, the red bars are the cities in Asia. And I want to draw your attention to this green bar. Here is the green bar indicates the EU standard of PM10, the particulate matter diameter of 10 mu micrograms. And if you use this EU standard, what you found was very, very striking. Over 2/3 of Asian cities do not meet EU air quality standard. But what about non-Asia, including Africa? It's only about 10% of the cities do not meet that standard. So Asia particularly face this air quality problem. And here's the CO2. We talk about the local indicator. Now, if we talk about CO2, we already know this region faced tremendous challenges. Yeah, from 2000 to 2008, Asia region, the CO2 emission, per capita emission actually almost doubled. But for non-Asia, it's only grown about 20%, which actually is a sort of significant contrast. And of course, I don't have to tell you among the top CO2 emitting economies, 60% or three of them are located in Asia. So, I mean, what does that, this is all the data in the past. I mean, what does that tell us, all these environmental problems? Well, the way economists does their job is to estimate what they call this environmental Kuznets curve. So we also pick up the Asia data and we did the, sort of quick and modeling. Here's the model. We don't have to explain that. That's a typical environmental Kuznets curve. Using that curve, we can try to project what will happen to Asia's environment as Asia continue to grow. Here is the diagram showing this Asia's environmental curve. As we can see, the CO2 emission will continue to increase as the region continues to grow. At the moment, Asia's GDP on average, PPP adjusted, is about $6,000. The peak point where the CO2 emission per capita will peak at income level of about $41,000. How long does it take? Maybe 20 years, 25 years. I mean, at the current rate we are growing. And that means if we don't do anything about it, our environment, the CO2 emission will continue to rise for the next 20, 25 years. And can we afford that? And we did a little calculation. And if we don't do anything about it, till 2050, our per capita CO2 emission will triple. Now, if Asian's CO2 per capita emission triple, I'm not sure whether the whole globe can stand that. I cannot imagine what will be the Earth look like. So the challenge is very, very serious. And then come to flooding. Some of you will know, Manila, where I'm come from, is flooding is such a, common sort of thing. And Bangkok, of course, suffered very, very serious flooding. Even China last year was this flooding, never happened in the last, 60 or 100 years. And actually, Asia as a whole is quite prone to flooding. Here is the number for coastal flooding for this region. We have about 251 million people exposed to coastal flooding in this region. And that represents about 20% of the population. And if you compare that number with other regions, there's simply you cannot compare. Africa is 32 million, Latin America only 24 million, one tenth. And we actually did some research on this sort of where the flooding, how serious in each, some of the major cities in China. And you can see the coastal flooding is very serious in the People's Republic of China. And to some extent, South and Southeast Asia. And we say Thailand, although we know Thailand is, was affected so much by flooding, but Thailand is not really on the top of this table. Thailand, probably on about 10, maybe 8 or 10 position. So the situation is quite serious. And here's the flooding situation scenario for inland flooding for the top 15 cities. Again, China features quite prominently on this table. Now, what will happen to vulnerability to flooding when Asia continue to urbanize? Well, here is the projection our staff did, our research team did. At the moment, we have about 300 million exposed to coastal flooding, and that number will increase to more than 400 million by 2025, not really a long time away. And in terms of inland flooding, at the moment, we have under 250 million, 245 million exact, exposed to inland flooding. But by 2025, we'll be 340 million. Subject to inland flooding. And of course, this is huge. But so far, I talked about the unique features of Asia's urbanization, and I talked about the various challenges, crime, inequality, and particular environment. How does these two link together? Well, we know that we have still at a low level of urbanization. That means we still have a long way to go. We don't see the, light at the end of the tunnel yet. Still quite a long way to go. The second is very fast speed, and that means really we have little time to learn or adjust. Actually, that's a point many national governments actually pointed to Asian Development Bank. Like people from Pakistan, even India came to the bank and said, can AADB help us with expertise? If not funding, if not finance, but expertise. We have trouble. We don't know to urban planning. These people just keep coming and we don't know how to cope. So they don't have time. I mean, if they have the luxury of, of Europe doing 250 years doing that urbanization rather than about 100 years, they would have more time to adjust and learn, but they don't. But I'm glad, actually, some of the top universities are really, taking up that opportunity. Like Stanford, I went to Stanford and they told us they're actually doing the mayor's training. So they take the mayors from Asia and let them tour around America. America is not very good example, I tell you. But maybe they can learn lessons. But the academics, those people, urban planners can tell them, what's good, what's not so good. So they're doing that kind of training, which is really very good from my point of view. And we have more and bigger cities, megacities, and of course, megacities are very hard to manage. I mean, managing a city like Shanghai about 30 million versus a city of 3 million or 1 million could be quite different. And we have more slums. More slums in particularly has implications for vulnerability for the rich, For those capable, they can handle much better, but for the really poor, and they cannot be helped once the disaster strikes. So this picture is not very nice. It's not really very promising, isn't it? But we believe, you were asking me, we believe urban agglomeration can help. And that's, as I said, that's a single message from this flagship publication. Why we believe so? Well, we're not denying the challenges, the negative impacts of urbanization on environment and other issues. What we try to do is really try to provide a balanced or objective picture to the national governments in that region. So we went and we did a study, we did discussions, we did all sorts of consultations, and we came up with some of these positive aspects of urbanization. We know that urbanization is very important for growth, for development of the service sector. And we know service sector typically pollutes less than manufacturing sector. So as the service sector expands, everything else stays the same. Of course, you will see less pollution than otherwise, right? So that's one aspect. The second aspect is you find, I'm sure it happened in Europe, it happened in the United States, it's still happening in Korea, it's happening in Japan, it's happening in China and other countries. The manufacturers tend to relocate as the city develops, as the economy continues to grow. Now, people actually question us, said, when manufacturers relocate, they don't really disappear. How do you say they're actually good for the environment? But one point we've got to realize, a factory typically probably they won't relocate until they're in a place about 30, 40 years. And that's what happened in Korea. And in China now, they've probably been there since 50s or even not earlier, 60s. What sort of technology do they use? That time, they did not really worry about the environment. They don't think about that. They don't have the regulation. They don't have the pressure. They have nothing. Whatever technology they have. But when they relocate, what will happen? They're going to use much better technology. And they have regulations guide them. So when manufacturers relocate, actually, we believe, again, everything else the same, there will be less pollution or better for the environment. And the third point I don't want to emphasize, of course, the infrastructure and services are much easier or much more economical to provide in urban areas rather than rural areas. I mean, I was actually talking to some people regarding China. They said, China has been promoting small cities because they believe it's good for the environment, but it's actually on the contrary. I mean, China rural areas are heavily polluted, and we cannot do much about it. It's so vast, it's so costly to do it. But if they concentrate in an urban area, it's much easier to handle, like waste disposal, like water treatment, like sewage, and so on and so on. So in that sense, urbanization is good. And of course, we know that there are plenty of evidence showing urbanization is good for innovation and higher labor productivity. There are a lot of statistics. In Asia, the urban productivity is about 3 to 5 times higher than the rural counterpart. So producing the same output with the same living standard, if you do that in urban areas, you consume less, you use less inputs, you emit much less. Yeah, and of course, the innovation actually is also relevant to environmental technologies as well. And we have plenty of examples and numbers in this publication. I don't have time to elaborate. And one thing we found very important, particularly from the bank's point of view, is urbanization actually helps nurture middle class and property owners. Now, people are asking, what does that to do with environment? Well, in China particularly, we find if there are more property owners, not renters, not people renting, they actually want the government, they're actually willing to sacrifice their own, their income and so on to try to improve the local environment. And that's very important for regulations. Yeah. If you don't have the mass support in China, particularly in other countries, the support from the popular mass is very important for regulations, particularly environmental regulations. And in that aspect, urbanization is good. And we have more. Urbanization, we know that actually helps to lower population growth. Here's the model. And based on this model, we actually did a simple calculation. By between 2010 and 2050, Asia will have about 170 million less births simply due to urbanization. If people stayed in rural areas, they will have more kids, but if they move to urban areas, for various sorts of reasons, they actually have less child. Now, less charred, is that good for Asia? Probably not for Japan, for China. But as far as environment is concerned, it's a good thing from that perspective. Actually, this number of population, you know, less population actually means in sort of current emission, you know, emission of India plus Vietnam. So we have much less emission simply due to this factor. Now, and also, we also know urbanization helps to promote human capital formation, again, for all sorts of reasons, and we all know that if you simply observe. Now, then what does that to do with environment? Well, here are actually the numbers, not by us, by World Value Survey. It's a major survey conducted worldwide. Actually, you can see that as the education level increases, people are more willing to sacrifice their income, sacrifice their goals, and pay higher tax for environment. And that, of course, is very important. I mean, the government needs money to handle environment. You need people to support the regulation. Without regulation, you cannot enforce them, right? So, and education is important, but education is also important for the environment. And I don't have to tell you the impact of urbanization on health. There are many examples in Europe. 100 years ago, there are many examples in the United States, probably 50, 60 years ago, why urbanization is good for health. So we depict a not so nice picture. There are negative aspects of urbanization. Now we also try to provide a balanced view. There are positive aspects. How to put all this together? You know, if we pick up one aspect, you cannot really argue. So what's the overall impact? Well, then we look into the economics literature. They actually grouped the environmental impact into three big groups. What the first they called growth impact. It means if an economy or economies grow without changing anything else, technology stays the same, and the structure of the economy stays the same, and everything else stays the same, only grow. Yeah? Well, that impact, we believe it's going to be negative. Right? Nothing, no technology change, no structural change. Service sector does not expand still the same proportion. So we put a cross. Yeah? It's a negative. But the second group of impact economists talks about is the composition effect, which is really economic structure. Yeah, as the country grow, as the country continue to urbanize. And we already mentioned, as the country to grow, as urbanization takes place, service sector will grow more or faster than other sectors. So the composition effect is likely to be positive. So we put a tick. And the final one is the technology effect. And of course, we know technology effect will be positive. There are a lot of new technologies, environmental friendly technologies, this new energy, clean energy, and so on. These are all the technology effect. And we believe this is positive. And we know urbanization helps the country to innovate and improve productivity. So what we did? We did another modeling. Put all this together. Let's try to model the relationship between environment and urbanization, not environment and GDP. I mean, I have to emphasize, reiterate, the typical literature in economics is model the Kuznets curve, which is relates environmental impact, environmental indicator with GDP level. But what we did is, because here we are looking at the relationship between environment and urbanization. So we did this sort of simple modeling, and we controlled for GDP, yeah, mind you. And we came up with this model. The model is okay because, as you can see, particularly for the CO2, it's actually quite good. For PM10, it's less perfect, but it's given that it's a cross-section data, it's actually reasonably good. And in particular, almost all the parameters, all the coefficients are significant. So what I'm saying, it's a reasonable model. We can use that model to make some inference. Now, use that model, we came up with this diagram. So we actually plotted that model here, and there are, again, two diagrams. One is the local indicator PM10. The other is global indicator of the environment, which is CO2. And we also, in each of these diagrams, we have two curves for two different periods. So here is the key finding, and that's a finding we really use to talk to, convey messages to the national government. And actually, this report is really producing a lot of impacts because the national government say, what we've been thinking is not necessarily correct or is not absolutely correct. We got to look at from different perspective. And that's a key diagram we show them. So as you can see, that it's a sort of inverted yield curve, so similar to this Kuznets curve, you know, this environment GDP. But here it's, of course, environment and urbanization. It's yield curve. That means things could get worse before they get better. And that's not unusual. But what's unusual is there are two things I want to point out. One, you noticed the red curve lies below the blue curve. And the red curve is more recent than earlier period. And that highlights the impact of the techno impact. You remember we had three broad groups of impacts: the technology change. The technology change actually bring down this environmental degradation, even for the same urbanization level. So that's one important finding, and very important. Nobody done that before for Asia, at least, which is quite interesting. I mean, we did it. The second point I want to show is, no matter which curve you look, all the four curves, you noticed the peak point of the red point actually also shifted to the left. Yeah, you saw the shift to the left. And that's, of course, very important. That means, okay, things will probably get worse before getting better. But the time, as time passes, as urbanization proceeds, that worse time will come much sooner. So in other words, we're telling them, yeah, things may get worse, but if you do properly, you will overcome that pretty soon. We don't have to wait for 20 years or 25 years. Maybe 5, 10 years, if we do better, we may, you know, come very, very soon. Right. So this is really a key finding from our publication. So with that finding, what are we saying to the government, to the policymakers? What you should do is try to continue to shift the curves, continue to move the curves, right? That's the direction you're going to design your policies. But how do we do that? Well, we have many recommendations in this book. Yeah, but I just want to highlight a couple of the major ones. One is megacities are inevitable, but what we suggest to the national government is you try to build satellite cities. Not only that, when you build the satellite cities, you got to actually follow some sort of modern concepts like the transit-oriented development, use bus rapid transit system, use the concept of green cities, compact cities, eco-cities, and so on. So it's just not simply set up satellite cities. And I should mention that we really, when they try to link Mac cities or the city center with satellite cities, we emphasize the rail-based, you know, we don't recommend highways, we don't recommend freeways. And that's a lesson, actually, when we did this in Beijing, in China, the National Reform Development Commission, they said that this is exactly what China did, and that's a big lesson we learned. And really, we got to, in the future, China got to listen to ADB, try to develop max cities, but not freeways. Yeah. And the second major point or recommendation we're making is exploit the latecomer's advantage. As we said, you know, Asia is still a latecomer, and in that, you know, context, the region can leapfrog technology by imports. You know, and without sort of waiting for the environment gets much worse before they use new technologies. And we're not saying every country should doing research and development. Some big countries may do, some small countries may simply import. And actually, I was in Turkey not long time ago, I was listening to the finance minister, and he was saying, environment is important, we're considering that, but we're not going to put a lot of money into research and development. We are waiting for China, which is good. I mean, leapfrog. China can take them 10 years, 15 years to develop some technology. They just buy them, as long as they have the money, as long as the economy can grow. So, depending on which country. And the second thing is we try to emphasize is really we must have timely introduction of regulations, because we know regulations does make a difference. But introduction of regulations is not easy. That's why we mentioned the nurturing property owners and middle class and also the education and so on, and that all linked to urbanization. And there are some other, more sort of concrete policy suggestions in terms regulation. And so with that, we can conclude. We believe it is counterproductive to contain urbanization, and that's happening in Asia, in China, in Vietnam, in Indonesia, in many other countries, and we believe that's not a good policy position, even for environmental concerns. Yeah. But urbanization can help, as we said. But urbanization also must be steered into a green path that exploits Asia's own unique features. And if we believe if Asia can do that, and we can have a win-win situation of environmental improvement and economic growth. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Van. Thank you very much for your presentation. This presentation will now be discussed by Mrs. Claudia Assmann, Program Officer, Economics and Trade Branch, Division of Technology, Industry and Economics at UNEP. In her current position, Mrs. Assmann focuses on green economy financing and investment, as well as on South-South cooperation in the framework of a green economy. And before joining UNEP, Mrs. Assmann was a program officer with the German Agency for International Cooperation, where she worked with the Climate Finance Initiative. Her work experience also includes consultancy positions on climate change adaptation with the World Bank, UNDP, and the Bolivian government. Mrs. Assmann, you have the floor.
I'd like to thank Dr. Wan for his very interesting presentation, and also the library, Johan Rist and Jungtat, for the opportunity to speak today, to act as a discussant on this very interesting and fascinating topic that is green urbanization. As Dr. Wan has pointed out, cities are where some of the world's most pressing challenges are concentrated. There's unsustainable resource and energy consumption, carbon emissions, pollution, and health hazards. But cities are also where hope lies. They are magnets attracting hundreds of millions of rural migrants in search for economic opportunities. In 2007, for the first time in human history, 50% of the global population lived in urban areas. And this figure is predicted to reach 75% by 2050. Mr. Van stated in his chapter that from 1980 to 2040, every year more than half of the increase in the world's urban population has been or will be in Asia. And by 2010, 12 of the world's 23 megacities were also located in Asia. Rapid urban growth tends to overwhelm cities, and the struggle to develop infrastructure and mobilize and manage resources has negative consequences for most for the environment. Challenges include air pollution, increased greenhouse gas emissions, access to clean water and sanitation, garbage collection and health. But these problems are not insurmountable. Dr. Wan's chapter also states that urbanization, and now I quote, urbanization can produce beneficial environmental outcomes, agglomeration helps, and can significantly decrease the amount of environmental degradation. And as he has stated, they are contributive factors to such an effect, improved productivity due to positive externalities and economies of scale, improved access to environment-related infrastructure, promotion of green innovation and technology, relocation of traditional manufacturing, and the attraction of a better educated population. All these factors ease the strain that is put on the environment by cities. One of the key messages, one of the sentences that came particularly struck me when I read this chapter was that it says, Asia can achieve green urbanization, but to do so, appropriate interventions must be designed and implemented. So we need political will. We need political willingness to steer the urbanization into the right direction, into a green direction. And from a UNEP perspective, I would like to go beyond the statement and emphasize that besides the need to do something to tackle the discussed environmental issues, it is also in the country's own interest to actually achieve a green urbanization. Why? Because cities can play a leading role in greening economies in both developing and developed countries. UNEP defines a green economy as one that is low carbon, resource efficient, and socially inclusive. And in a green economy, pollution and carbon emissions are decoupled from economic growth. Cities can play an important factor for enhancing a green economy transition. And this because of three reasons. Cities offer economic benefits by nature and are therefore at the heart of a green economy transition. Cities can also be designed and managed to limit resource consumption and carbon emissions and generate environmental benefits. And cities can contribute to poverty eradication. So coming to my first point, that cities offer economic benefits by nature. From an economic perspective, cities matter because they bring people together, because things get closer. They help overcome information gaps and enable idea flows. So urbanization boosts productive efficiency by lowering transport costs and by widening trade networks. And it's for these reasons that 150 of the world's most significant metropolitan economies produce 46% of global GDP, with only 12% of the global population. So in a way, cities are incubators of innovation. And this is why they're important. And when we talk about green economy, we need to look at cities, because that is where it starts. The OECD calculates, for example, that 10 times more renewable energy patents are actually generated in cities than in non-urban areas. My second point would be that cities can be designed, planned, and managed to limit resource consumption and carbon emissions, and that they can generate environmental benefits. More compact urban forms reduce travel distances, and an investment in green transport will lead to greater energy efficiency. Also, cities lower surface to volume ratios of buildings, and this can result in lower heating and cooling loads, for example. So we can save energy by living in cities. Research has also shown that compact cities with a higher density of residential and commercial buildings and an efficient public transport system have lower per capita carbon emissions. So that was my second point. Cities are not only economically beneficial, but also can have an environmental impact, positive environmental impact. But cities can also contribute to poverty eradication. The green economy concept promotes that 2% of global GDP should be shifted from brown to green sectors. And it argues that shifting that investment, green jobs can be created. And this is also true for cities. So greening the cities can create jobs in a number of areas, for example, in urban and peri-urban green agriculture, in public transport, in renewable energy, in waste management, and in green construction, for example, retrofitting buildings. An example would, for example, be Dhaka in Bangladesh, where a project for generating compost from organic waste helped create 400 new jobs in collection activities and 800 new jobs in processing the composting. So in addition, if we have a well-working innovative approach for urban planning and management, we can also fight poverty, because we can help the access to clean water and sanitation. We can enhance public transport use and improve fuel use, cleaner fuel use for cooking, transport, and power generation. So in conclusion, I would say one of the statements was Asia can achieve a green urbanization if the policies are in place, and I would say there are strong incentives to put the right policy in place. There are strong incentives to show political willingness to do so. And take advantage of the opportunities that a green economy can offer. Of course, greening cities is not cost-free. There are trade-offs. They will create both winners and losers. And consumer preferences are also not always green. Cities may face financial and structural and also technological concerns when they want to shift to a green urbanization. So this will require a coalition of actors across public, private, and civil society sectors. And as Dr. Wan has pointed out, we will need enabling conditions, the right policies in place to enable this transition. For example, internalizing externalities, for example, by introducing carbon taxes or by putting in place user charges for roads, for example. The title of this of today's event is called Paradox or Win-Win Scenario, and I would maybe go further and say it's not only a win-win scenario, city and environment, but it's a win-win-win scenario, because by greening cities, we can also enhance a transition to a green economy, which in the end will help us achieve sustainable development. Thank you. Thank you.
check out our other podcasts available free on the iTunes Store. For more information, go to our website, www.unris.org. If you have any suggestions for future podcasts, email us at press@unris.org. Thank you for listening.